What's good, everybody? This episode of the podcast is sponsored by DistroKid. They are the go-to for digital music distribution and the easiest way for musicians to get your music onto Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, TikTok, YouTube, and all the places you need your music to be. They offer unlimited uploads, and artists keep 100% of their earnings in-store 10 to 20 times faster than any other distributor. Fastest payouts, they help out with automatic splits, cover song clearance, and all kinds of other amazing tools and templates to help you get the most visibility for your releases. I dig this company and really appreciate their business model that offers more features than any other distributor at the most affordable price possible for solo musicians, bands, studio artists, DJs, and any other creators that are producing music in their home, and they also offer label services as well. They've got three different tiers to offer creators that start as low as $22.99 a year. That's just $1.92 per month, and even their top tier breaks down to only $7.50 per month. And the best part about DistroKid sponsoring the podcast is that they are offering Dan Cable Presents listeners 30% off your first year of membership, making their already affordable services even cheaper for you. Check out the link in the episode notes. I also put it in my Instagram bio in the link tree. Click that link and it'll give you 30% off your first year of service. Super stoked to have DistroKid sponsoring the podcast and can't thank them enough for their longtime support of this thing. Let's start the episode. What is happening, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Dan Cable Presents podcast. Thank you for tuning into the program once again. If this is your first time listening, thanks for checking out the show. You can find fresh episodes coming at you every Tuesday. And if you want to help support this thing in a free way, you can do so by clicking subscribe on iTunes, clicking write a review, giving the podcast 5 stars if you feel like it is deserving of so, and that will help propel this thing into the tops of those iTunes charts, which will give it more visibility on the national and international levels, helping strangers find the podcast, and just a great way to contribute to the growth and sustainability of this thing. Appreciate the hell out of all the folks that have already taken the time to do so. If you're not listening on Apple, just hit like, follow, subscribe wherever you are listening from. Give it 5 stars on Spotify. Tell a friend about the podcast. Check out the monthly playlist that I've been dropping every first of the month. Those are available on Apple and Spotify. Pretty spread out genre-wise. Just a snapshot of what I'm listening to throughout the month and some things that are making it in to my DJ sets. The links for those are in the episode notes. Hope everybody is doing well out there. Happy Hanukkah if you're celebrating. I'm super stoked to get to share this episode that I recorded with Portland-based rapper Corey B. Man, I thought I lost this one. I was having a big issue with the file that had my microphone feed on it, and it was stressing me out hard. Definitely seemed like I was going to have to figure out another way to put this episode out, maybe without my voice involved in it, and do like some NPR style thing where it was just Corey's commentary and trying to figure out how to weave all of that in and out. But a friend who's really good with tech and coding and whatnot was able to repair the file for me. And luckily it was kind of like a fun puzzle for him. And it was such a relief on top of the recent break-in that happened to my studio just a couple of weeks ago. It was leaving me feeling quite defeated. But also for some reason, I just had some faith this time around that it would work itself out. And I think normally my first reaction to something like this happening would just be an immediate panic attack. And although I was pretty bummed and a bit lost for figuring out how to move on or move through it, I think I handled it better than I would have in the past. And I think a big part of that anxiety is just feeling like I wasted someone's time as far as recording an episode with a guest and then having nothing to show for it. And then the other big issue is, yeah, Corey and I, you know, we could have jumped on the mics again and could have just re-recorded, but then you're in this weird territory where you're trying to like recreate a conversation, and I'd be asking a lot of questions that I already knew the answers to. So like I said, I'm pumped that this one didn't get lost, and I'm excited to share the chat. Shout out to Mike, who saved this episode for me, and just super grateful for him taking the time to help me out on such short notice. He was able to figure out this issue like within 24 hours and just really came through, saved the day for me, lifted the spirits yesterday when I was able to get back into the editing bay and put this episode together. So I really enjoyed this chat with Corey. He just seems like a great dude, and also just a really talented and hardworking MC, just killer on the mic, and a dude whose work ethic I really admire. So let's just get right into this thing. Shout out to all the Portland artists mentioned in this episode. Many of them have episodes of this podcast. Eric Boderick and something Brax come to mind and thinking about that. And this episode features a bunch of collabs between Eric and Corey B. And we definitely dive into that dynamic in this conversation. So with all that, we are going to get into episode 389 with Corey B. Thanks for your patience out there with this week's episode. All the links for Corey will be in the episode notes. And we're going to kick off the episode with one of my favorite Corey B tracks. It's from his 2022 Effortless record. This one was produced by 10th member, and it's called Dream Come True. Let's do the damn thing.
Always waited for me. Look, the vamp turned into a bet, no Robbie Pett. About to get the lead out like Robbie Plant. I'm uninterested in listening to sobby rants from copycats who can't tell if they wanna rock or rap. Get to falling back, you need another hobby jack. Ain't no stocking cap, it's bare face when I pocket tap. They bring an army on stage, but the posse whack. I'm S-O-L-O, Dolo with the saucy tracks. Handing out body bags, shutting down the venue. Suspenseful with a pencil, got it cutting like a Ginsu. They haven't invented a vest that could protect you from being ripped to shreds by me just doing what I'm meant to. My father came to this nation and had to learn to speak. Now I'm taking what he burned in me and trying to earn my keep. My mother nurtured me, knew I could put words to beats. Came into this world a beast the minute she gave birth to me. Catch me on Mercury, I'm skipping around the planets, hitting distant lands and doing different kind of damage. Blinking, you might miss it with the quickness I'm abandoned. Y'all been in and out the scene, I've been known to never abandon. Bunch of clowns, we about to blow you out a cannon. I've been chowing down while they've been growling from the famine. Pound for pound, I hold the crown while they examine how with one arm around my back still make it special single-handed.
Corey, before we jump into this thing?
Nah.
All right.
I think let's
run it.
Let's rock it.
Let's run it. Let's rock it.
I'm all a little nervous, but you know, that's all.
All right. Well, hopefully
it's first song jitters.
Hopefully I can put you at ease.
No, for sure.
You know, excited to jump on the mics with you. For the amount of times I have been in the same room with you, I don't really, you know, haven't had a whole lot of time to like get to know you or have any extensive chats with you. It's always like just,
it's kind of how it goes, you know. It's like there's so many people that like I know strictly from musical situations, and then like every now and then you get a chance to like be in like a studio or like anywhere other than like a loud venue with them, and it's like, oh, this is kind of weird.
Yeah, other than standing outside, you know, the venue, maybe bullshitting a little bit.
Yeah, but there's only so much you can convey in moments like that, you know.
I do feel like I've had, you know, since things started opening up again, I've had the opportunity to see you perform quite a bit.
Yeah,
I've seen a lot of your shows, specifically like at Mississippi Pizza.
Dude, love
seen
that
you there
place
quite a few times.
That seems to be a lot of the fans love that place. You know, anybody who likes going to my shows, they always say that for some reason, like, it's not even like the most like built out place for that sort of thing, you know, but like something about the setup, the energy in the room, people just love it. So
yeah,
I love going back, you know.
I've certainly like seen some shows pop off over there, and like, I don't know, I like the laid back kind of casual nature of that place.
Yeah.
And, you know, they got good pizza.
Yes.
You
yeah,
know,
definitely
affordable shows.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. That's the thing too, you know?
Yeah. And that dude, Dan, that books that place, has just always been like a long time supporter of this like local music scene.
For sure.
Since I've been here.
Yeah. I've kind of picked up on that through like doing the shows there and stuff. Yeah. Big hookup from the My Goons PDX homies. They've always been real big supporters of everything I've done. So
absolutely, man. Good dudes, and like, yeah, they've held that hungry hip hop down for a really long time.
Totally.
But yeah, man, I all the times that I have seen you perform, I just always appreciate how technically sound you are. You are like a dude that when I see you perform, it is clear to me that you put a lot of work into the craft, you know? And if you don't, then you make it look that way.
Oh, no, for sure. I think it's very common to kind of like play it cool and just be like, nah, I've just got it like that, you know? But I definitely... I feel it's very important to have things ready by the time you get up there. And obviously there's only so many controllable variables when it comes to performing, and like, you know, you can only predict so much and things can't always go 100% the way you anticipate them to go. But I do everything on my end to like, ensure that people are getting the show they deserve, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
the show that they pay for. And I just love performing at the end of the day.
For sure, man. It definitely comes across that way. You know, you always look very excited and fired up to jump on the mic, whether it's your full set or I just see you get, you know, maybe brought up to do one track in someone else's performance.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure. I try to make sure they remember it. You know? It's like the easiest way to get booked for a later thing is making an impression in the one song that you're up there for a couple of minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, man, help me set some foundation for, you know, your beginnings. Like, what is where'd you grow up? Like, what's the early exposure to music? How'd you, you know, get interested in wanting to perform?
Man, that's a great question. I mean, dude, music has always been a really big part of my life as a whole, and the life of like those who've raised me. My parents weren't like performers or anything like that, but like my mom was definitely like always very into music. If you want to go way back, my mom went to an MC Hammer concert when she was pregnant with me. Probably all started there.
Damn. You know? In the womb at the MC Hammer concert.
Yeah, you know, I was doing the Hammer dance in the womb. No big deal. No, but yeah, I've just always really loved music. Grew up loving music, you know, performing and things like that, the way in which little kids do, you know, singing, dancing, rap, and all kinds of crazy stuff.
So did you kind of always appreciate what your parents were playing around the house?
Yeah,
like growing up?
Mostly a lot of the musical influence of some of the like earlier like memories I have of music are mostly from my mom. She always was very big into like 90s R&B and rap stuff, and you know, so some light influence from the 80s and things like that. And yeah, a lot of the older memories I have are like riding in the car with my mom listening to, you know, some of the more classic like Biggie songs that would be, you know, a lot of stuff was kind of just cycling through the radio at the time. So like just whatever was being played. And then also, I guess, touching back on like where I grew up or whatever, I was born in Hillsborough and kind of moved around as a kid, mostly through like the kind of like Washington County area of like Beaverton, Tigard, ultimately ending up back in Hillsborough and kind of growing up there a majority of my my school years, going into like middle school, high school. And a few years after, but
so you've been around the greater Portland area like all your life?
Yeah, for sure. Especially like going into like high school and stuff, you know, coming out here on the weekends. I've always been like very into skateboarding, so like me and a bunch of my friends would always come out here on the weekends because this is where things were happening.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I spent a lot of time kind of just like cruising through the city with a big group of my friends who all kind of lived out in Hillsborough also.
Yeah. Did you go to any shows as a kid? High school or anything like that?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, honestly, most of it was like kind of like bigger Moda Center stuff. I didn't really start going to like shows at like downtown venues or anything like that until I was like more in high school. And even then it was kind of just more, kind of more like indie kind of stuff. I remember one of the first shows I really remember going to that was like in like a you know, legitimate venue, I guess, that wasn't the Rose Garden at the time. It was like, I think I saw the Kooks or something like that at Wonder Ballroom and stuff like that. But yeah, started going to more hip hop shows and things like that once I got a little older in high school. And then me and my friends were like really into Andre Nicotina, and he performed at least like once a year in Portland. So we would always, you know, trek out to go to those and have a real good time, I guess. I'll leave it at that.
You got an Andre Nicotina record over there.
Nice. Yeah. It's funny too, because I feel like just growing up where I grew up, it's all like par for the course, because like it seemed like at just a point in time, like everybody I grew up around was just like super into dude stuff. And like, you couldn't really go anywhere without hearing it at like parties or whatever. So it was very easy to fall into that kind of like Bay Area influence for sure.
It's funny. I didn't really know that name Andre Nicotina until our mutual homie Fox.
Oh yeah.
He had one of his old tracks, he had this reference to Andre Nicotina, and like put me on to checking out that music.
Yeah, no, it's funny now, because like, you know, that was a big chapter of like my teenage years and stuff like that. And I'll listen back to it now, and it's all just like, it's just a real blast to my memory. I'm like, holy shit, I forget all about this stuff. But yeah, no, definitely can't go without mentioning that time.
But growing up, you were like always listening to a pretty wide range of music. It wasn't like you were like some strict hip hop head. You were going to like a lot of indie rock shows. And
Definitely. And like, I feel like, you know, as much music as my mom listened to, I feel like there was a lot of stuff that I kind of had to go about putting myself onto. I'm the oldest of my siblings. And, I feel like a lot of times when it comes to like hip hop stuff, a lot of people have like, you know, older brother influences that kind of put them onto some of the foundation of hip hop. And a lot of that stuff was stuff that I had to kind of like discover for myself, like later into like being a teen. You know, shout out to Bear Share and LimeWire. You know, you get told about one artist and you can just get their whole, not only their whole discography, but there's also really sick like live versions and like random,
all these bootlegs,
like you know. So shout out to LimeWire for that one. But I would say I've always been like heavily influenced by a lot of stuff. And you know, being like a teenager, a lot of my taste in music, I think, came directly from whatever they were putting in skate videos at the time.
Hell yeah.
You know, I remember having like those like smaller MP3 players, like pre-iPod. And I had actually gotten one from a good friend of mine, my old buddy Austin. And I remember it was just completely loaded up with songs from super popular skate videos at the time. And like, it was just like pretty all over the place. A lot of stuff from like the Baker videos, Foundation. And so I always, when I trace it back, I'm like, oh man, a lot of this really did come from like just being influenced by skateboarding and like being put onto things through like watching skate videos as a kid and stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure. It's such a, like, even in the skate videos, it's such a wide range of music from like punk rock to rap.
And for sure. And I feel like it was a lot easier to hear so many different things in the earlier days of it, because skateboarding was still, there was only so many eyes on it at the time that I feel like a lot of these videos weren't super worried about like copyright infringement, stuff like that, versus now, like, you know, that they know skateboarding's making money, they'll go after these guys if they don't, you know, go through the pay. It's like clearing samples, you know what I mean? Like, they really got to do what they got to do to make sure that like nobody comes after him for it. So
absolutely.
But,
so did you get into like skateboarding heavily way before you had any like fascination with actually like making music of your own or writing raps?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, I've always been really big into like just like performing music. I feel like I was very encouraged to be a performer from like a very young age, because I was always just very enthusiastic about being in front of crowds and stuff. So my family always kind of put me in a position to encourage my musical endeavors, I will say. But so I was definitely into like just doing music and stuff, but not making music of my own. Just had like a big fascination with it. But when I was 8 years old, my uncle had given me my first skateboard. It was like a hand-me-down skateboard that I feel like prior to that, I had like no idea of like the existence of skateboarding before meeting him, because he was into it. You know, he kind of like showed me the way through a lot of stuff, not only with skateboarding and like understanding the importance of a lot of things involved with that, but like he put me onto so much music. He was like a huge, like, I don't even know. He had like a crazy like computer that had just like access to just about everything. And he had like a really like wide taste in music and put me onto like a lot of very like left field rap stuff, like Dr. Octagon and like super, because I think I showed like a lot of interest in like the first Gorillaz album that had come out. I just thought like the videos and the whole presentation was just like so sick, because I was like a kid. And he was like, oh, well, if you like that, then like you should check these things out, you know what I mean? And I'd get sent home with like 20 burnt CDs of full albums of stuff that like it, you know, either I would listen to and like, or would like listen to and like appreciate why he wanted me to like check it out and stuff like that. So I feel like that was kind of like a big shaping of like what I would like go on to be into, and like kind of opened up my eyes a bit to like different avenues and stuff like that. So shout out to my Uncle Ryan.
Yeah. So it sounds like he kind of played like almost that older sibling role that you were talking about, where you have that older person to like put you on to stuff that you maybe have access to or just even know about.
Yeah, definitely went a lot deeper than what was just playing on the radio at the time. So
yeah,
shout out to him.
So was there a long time spent listening to different rap and hip hop before you actually started writing bars for yourself, or like explored what your voice was like as a rapper?
Yeah, definitely. I would say I didn't really start diving into like fully making music of my own until like my last year and a half of high school. So I kind of just like formed everything that like I thought about music and liked about music like up until that point. I think that there was like a small part of me that knew that, like, because I had other like family members, like my other uncles and stuff like that, who had like MPCs and stuff.
Oh, okay.
Like my Uncle Tom had like MPCs that he would make like super wild music on. It was like pretty above my understanding of music. A lot of
super experimental.
Yeah, a lot of it was like very fused with like pretty hard like metal stuff that was going on at the time. But I always thought it was so sick going over and seeing like his MPC and being like, oh man, like I feel like if I just had like something like that at some point, I could very easily, you know, come up with things. But yeah, so I kind of always had that in my head after being around it so much. But it wasn't really until, well, I feel like as a kid, a lot of people like go through the experience of like, you know, either like stupid little freestyles or like even writing. Like, I remember I'd find like old journals of mine that were like full of drawings and random stuff. And every now and then there'd be like a super crazy little like rap of like 8 bars or something like that. I was like, yo, what the hell did I think I was on, bro? Like, who did I think I was? But, so, you know, there's like that stage of it. And like, I didn't get like super serious about making my own music until, like I mentioned, kind of later in high school. I was hanging out with a lot of people who were like super into like, you know, kind of partying and like starting like insane ciphers of people like at parties. Nothing ever like super serious. A lot of it was pretty outrageous, and a lot of it was like definitely some stuff that like should have only been heard in those moments and not repeated. You know what I'm saying? But I remember it was just like so many dudes like who, you know, had no interest in really doing music or pursuing music in any way would just like get pretty intoxicated and like make some crazy statements and just like just be going super hard. And like, I don't know, I never really had like the bravery within me, I guess, to like step up and like do it with them, because I knew I couldn't come up with the outrageous stuff that they were all coming up with. But I knew that like I definitely loved writing, so I would kind of like do it in secret, I guess, just because it wasn't like, I don't know, it's kind of frowned upon to like come to the cypher with like a written, you know what I mean? And it's totally understandable, but I just like, I think I just always had like a belief that if people are going to hear my capabilities in rap, I would prefer that it was like an actual showcase of what I'm capable of.
For sure.
And my brain doesn't work quick enough to, you know, come up with fire in the freestyle realm. So yeah, honestly, I think a lot of it came from just being inspired by the way that those guys would just kind of like do this like kind of joke deal or whatever, but like being like, yo, like it is sick though, like when you get a run going. So I would slowly write raps in like my journals and things like that. And so that kind of sparked it. But then when it came time, like I had kind of mentioned earlier, I always knew that if I was like in a situation where I was capable of figuring out how to make like my own beats and stuff, that I was going to be able to do it. Cause I was like one of those people who kind of always heard like music in my head, so to speak, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for
so,
sure.
I remember one weekend specifically, I had convinced one of our friends to bring over his like super big, like crazy MacBook, to a friend's house who he lived like right up the street from me. And it was kind of like a central place where like me and all my friends would hang out. And I was like, dude, I know that that thing has GarageBand and I know I can figure out how to make something cool if you guys just like let me have this computer here for like the weekend. And in that weekend I made like probably like 6 to 8 like probably pretty shitty beats on GarageBand, but like,
but you were working, you were cooking.
Yeah, I was figuring it out, and I was proving to myself, I was like, see, this is exactly what I mean. Like, I know if I could like have the chance to sit down with something, like I could really figure something out. So in that weekend, we had like taken the doors off of my buddy's closet door, fixed up like a little booth inside of the closet with like a mattress up against it. And I think it was like a some sort of like bike seat, bike stand situation where we rigged up the USB microphone from Rock Band.
Beautiful.
I think it was. Yeah, it was like Guitar Hero type stuff. But it was a USB mic that plugged directly in. So like we finessed that. And
damn, that's crazy that that worked like that.
It was. And you know what's funny is I still have that mic, because it's just like a funny thing to look back on. It's like a humble beginning.
Yeah, dude, that's a good keepsake.
Sort of deal. So yeah, no. So within like a day or two, me and my buddy Tyler, who doesn't really pursue music, but he was like one of those people who was like an insane freestyler, like all throughout high school. We had recorded this 6-track EP in, I think, like 2 days or something like that.
What year is this, Corey?
This was, it had to be 2011.
Okay.
Probably like 2011, 2012,
this
something like that.
This is like your senior year?
Yeah,
like,
so I graduated 2011. So okay. Like it was after we were out of high school and it was the summertime.
Okay.
And yeah, so we just kind of banged it out really quick and had like a 6-track EP that we called Weed and Pizza. You know, very, very telling of like where we were at that age, I guess you could say, you know,
that makes sense.
Bunch of 18 to 19 year olds. And, we just remember like, it was like the coolest thing ever. And I think there was like a point where we had gone up to, our friend has a mountain cabin, and like a bunch of us went out there to kind of party like a week or two later, or no, it might have been like the weekend following, because I remember thinking like, I have to have this done by then so I could play it for them and let, you know, they can let me know what they think. And there was a really funny point. I'll like never forget this. And I think I kind of mentioned it in like a song I had done recently, but like there was a point in which like we had all the cars parked like in the driveway of this like mountain cabin, and like they had like the doors open and they were just like bumping this CD that we had made super loud, and everybody was just like partying, like having a super dope time. And I remember like taking a step back like by myself and like kind of observing the scene and being like, oh yeah, no, as soon as I get back into town, I'm actually doing something, bro. Like, this is the feeling I get from watching them having this much fun to like something that I had made is just like, it's incomparable. And that's kind of where it all started.
Yeah, you know, you're setting the vibe in the room with your music.
Yeah, it's it was a real funny, like it felt like everything kind of like was in slow-mo low-key that I was like, oh yeah, no, fuck that, we're doing this.
Yeah, so what do you think your gravitation towards, like, obviously it took a while before you were like ready to like maybe share in the live form what you were doing, but like, what do you think your gravitation towards writing was like early on, or like expressing yourself in that way? Did you always find it to be this important thing? I'm sure it wasn't like always as conscious maybe or clear to you like what it is now, but like but like, I don't know, did you always feel like you were getting a lot out of it, even as, you know, early on in high school?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've always kind of been very into a number of different like creative outlets, be it like drawing or whatever. Like, I've always just like been very into, I guess, for lack of a better phrasing, the arts. So like when it came time to like start writing my own stuff, I just like really, it was a lot of fun just kind of coming up with stuff that I thought like sounded cool, or like, you know, just kind of taking what I had like learned from those I was like inspired by musically and like applying it to what I was doing. You know, a lot of people talk about like being students of the game or whatever, and I definitely felt that I was that, you know what I mean? Because I was very observant of like the stylistic choices and like wordplay that a lot of like the people I was listening to were using. And I did try to like emulate that. I think a lot of people kind of start that way where like, you know, it's pretty clear cut, like, oh, they're like taking this from there and it kind of sounds like that. But over time, you know, you kind of develop your own sound from just like working at that slowly, you know? So I think it was just like another outlet for me. And like, once I was figuring out that I could do it like pretty well, you know what I mean? It was just kind of like more fuel for the fire to like kind of keep going. Yeah. So I had put out a few things almost as soon as I got home from that trip. I think I had done like it was probably like 10 tracks or something like that of me like rapping over other people's beats at the time. I was always really inspired by Lil Wayne, actually. A lot of his like early 2000s runs of like taking people's beats and like flipping them into stuff that was even better than the original songs. I mean, even to this day, I'll listen back to a lot of that stuff and be like, dude, the original version of this song does not touch what that dude did over it. Like, nobody was safe at that time period. You know what I mean? Specifically, there's a freestyle he has over this Beyonce song called Upgrade You. And dude, that was like essential listening for me and a lot of my friends back then. And he's just he was just on a tear back then. So I took inspiration from that and just pulled like a few beats of things that I was like either into at the time or songs that I knew were kind of like popping at the time, and just wrote my own verses over it. And that was like the first project that I had uploaded to the internet, because it was kind of in that time that like SoundCloud and you know, uploading things to DatPiff mixtapes was like very accessible.
Yeah, heavy mixtape era in general. You're just
I missed the MySpace era, but it was like right before what I was doing. So then like SoundCloud and everything was there, and I uploaded that there, and it just kind of took off from there, I guess.
Do you always feel pretty good about like sharing your music in that form? Like, after especially after you had that like cabin experience where you were playing your music in the room and seeing people vibe to it. You were like, cool.
Definitely. Yeah. I kind of just hit the ground running. You know what I mean? For better or for worse. I mean, truth be told, I went back and like, I think there was a period where I was getting like, you know, what I considered to be better at what I was doing and went back and listened to a lot of stuff that I had on the internet and was like, nah, I don't want people to hear this. And I definitely like ripped a lot of that old stuff off of there because I'm like, this is not a reflection of what I'm capable of anymore.
I think that's a good place to be is like where you, when you can go back and be like, well, like, yeah, this doesn't really represent
the growth. The growth is there. So let me just show people what I'm at. That's the thing too, is it's like a good thing and a bad thing to have that accessibility because I didn't have anybody who wasn't telling me not to put things up. And those who supported me at the time only had so much understanding of like what was cool and what sounded good.
Yeah.
So I was just going off of like the opinions of my friends who weren't like into music in the way in which I was, you know, so I was always like, if they like it, then, you know, it's probably worth putting out. But, you know, it just comes with like working on things a little longer and figuring out what actually does work and what doesn't. But
it was like an obsession kind of
for sure
thing, or like you, I don't know, did you always kind of like understand the work ethic part of things or like that discipline? Cause I feel like skateboarding very similar, right? Like where you're just working on a trick over and over and over. And if you have that discipline, you will get there.
Yeah, no, for sure. You know, I think a lot of it goes back to the love I've had for performing and just like being in front of crowds and stuff like that.
That's always like, been like a comfortable space for you. Never like a nervous
thing. No, for sure. I think everybody gets nervous no matter how confident you are. You know what I mean? So there's always like the initial jitters, but like once I'm up there, that's like, that's my zone, you know? And it kind of has always been that way. So I feel like I've always made music with the intent of performing it at some point, if ever given the chance, which didn't come too long after I had like initially started making music. I had friends who did like other things, you know, ran like small independently owned skateboard companies and things like that. And they always found ways to incorporate like what I was doing in what they had going on. So yeah, the opportunity came pretty quick. And when I had the chance, I definitely seized it, you know.
You wanted to make sure that it, that like when you did it live, people knew that you were putting in the work.
Yeah, no, for sure. I remember, I think it's worth mentioning too that, you know, I haven't always gone by my current stage name, which is essentially just my name, but this is all when I was under the moniker of Killa K. So if
the
you
Killa K era.
Yes sir. Yeah, which lasted up until like 2019, something like that. I think I put out my last quote unquote Killa K project in 2019, and you can go back on all the DSPs and stuff and it's on there. So, you know, some of the more recent stuff though, it's like, I think like 2018, 2019.
Was that kind of just sparked by you feeling like you had hit like a different level and you were just ready for like kind of a clean slate in some ways?
I think so. Yeah. Like, I think a big part of it was just feeling like kind of a goofball when I was like introducing myself to people at like events where I was performing or like whatever. It just felt kind of funny being like, what's up, man? I'm Killa K. Corey, but you know.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people could kind of relate to that because, you know, everybody's got their stage names, cool as they can be. I'm sure it's kind of funny sometimes introducing yourself as like so and so, but it's like, that's not my real name.
That's funny, man. I was just talking to Love Jones about that the other night. We were just talking about how many people like don't know people's actual names in the scene a lot of the time. Like you know their stage name, and they're like, there's some people that like I will never, even if I do know their real name, just like I probably won't call them that. Like I just had Slurgeon on the podcast, and I was telling Jonas, aka Love Jones, I was like, there's never going to be a moment where I call Slurge Michael. I just know him as Slurge.
And that's
what I will refer to him as, unless I'm introducing him in some sort of formal setting.
To my parents.
Yeah. This is Michael.
No, for sure. Yeah. So I think a lot of the change in that came from just like being like, nah, I don't really want to go by that anymore, you know?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it too just kind of came from, I don't know. I think I just like always knew that like I could reach a level of confidence in which I could just like kind of go by my name and like not really feel any sort of way about it, I guess. I mean, I a lot of other rappers that I've been into have done the same. I was like super big into Kendrick Lamar when he had like first hit the scene. Like he was doing all of his like older TDE stuff and things like that. And I thought a lot about how like he had like, you know, a stage name prior to just eventually like going by his name.
Yeah.
And I was always like, yeah, see, it's going to get to a point one day where I'm just going to be like, you know what? Nah, I'm like, I'm just laying all the cards on the table as far as the stage name goes, I guess. Yeah. So, and it's been a lot easier just introducing myself as Corey to people. It
for
feels
sure.
a lot more natural than a, you know, I was no longer a killer. You know what I mean? I think that's kind of what it came down to. But, you know, I think a lot of that too was just, you know what? I'm totally remembering that name wasn't even chosen by me. It was more given to me because me and my friends were just like, big into Wu-Tang the way most teenage kids are, you know what I mean? And my friend Alex had like appointed himself as the giver of Wu-Tang names when we were in high school. So me and my close group of friends and then like anybody who had come over to hang out with us was given like very specific Wu-Tang names, we said, and mine was Killer K.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like too, like, you know, you kind of started going under Corey B when you started really feeling like you had developed your voice, your own voice, and moved past the point where we were talking about where you're just kind of like absorbing all these things. And those are like going into like your delivery and everything. But, you know, having 5, 6, 7 years of experience doing the thing, that's, you know, that's a lot of time to put in to like figure out like what you actually want to say and what your delivery is and like what beats work for you or
totally. Yeah. And, I felt like I was just kind of like in a stage where things were kind of changing like stylistically for me. I've always relied on my own production for the most part with help from, you know, a select few here and there, in the earlier part of like me making music, but I just like, I didn't want to have to seek these things out. So I just like made it a point. I think I had done like a house painting job with my friend Tyler, and that was like a weekend long.
Yeah.
And I saved up enough money to get a Machine Micro. And yeah, dude, as soon as I got that like that drum machine, it felt like a real like full circle thing where like, you know, going back to like my uncle who had the MPC and things like that, I was like, dude, now that I have this, like, I'm just going to spend a ton of time trying to figure out how to get it all situated.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's still the same drum machine I use to this day. But yeah, I think I was at a point where my beats were kind of changing too. Like the style in which my beats were, the direction they were going in, I guess you could say, it was like something I felt was kind of different from what I had been doing before. And I was kind of figuring out a little more like how I wanted to say things, and like my influences were changing also, I feel like.
Yeah, as they do.
Yeah. So I always like, I think I hit a point too where I was like, I want to make the music that I listen to and like not just the first things that I can come up with.
Yeah.
So putting a little more thought into being like, I want to be able to like have something that like is reflecting upon like what I'm listening to right now. And that's kind of just the same like way I've gone about it since. And the change of my name happened at the top of 2020. So like right before going into lockdown and everything, I had like made the decision like, all right, this year I'm going to go by my name and I'm going to, you know, really take some time to make some different kind of beats or whatever and figure it out. And needless to say, that year I had a lot of time to devote to the music and figure it all out. So
for sure. For sure. So like the beat making, that's still like a part of what you do.
For sure.
Like,
yeah.
I know that you definitely, you know, have like worked with different producers like on records you've put out. But like, I would imagine that that was really important to you to even figure out how to make beats, just to be able to facilitate your own ideas and have things to rap over constantly and not have to like rely on other people to make beats for you.
That was always a big part of it, is like, I've always been very like self-driven to figure things out, just so I didn't have to rely on others to get what I wanted to do out to the world. So like, I've always, you know, up until more recently, I always recorded everything myself, you know, edited everything, like everything that came out prior to like 2020 was all my vision. Essentially, I did like all my cover art and everything else also. And yeah, I've just always been very hands-on. I'm a bit of a control freak, but I feel like that's it's a beneficial trait to have when it comes to music, you know?
Yeah. I would imagine that's got to be helpful to you now too, communicating your ideas when you are working with, you know, a producer.
Yeah. It's definitely been a bit of a learning curve, honestly. Like I think I'm at the point now where I'm able to figure out those situations a little easier, because I've always been so like secluded in what I did that I've really learned a lot in like kind of handing off some of the responsibilities to other people.
Yeah.
It's also, I think, helped make me a little bit more well-rounded as a person altogether, just because I'm
just
not like
a little bit.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Because I can be very, very controlling, you know what I'm saying? So to dive into things where like there's multiple hands in it, I've definitely gotten a lot better at kind of like knowing where I can ease up and kind of just giving other people the freedom to do what they do also.
Yeah,
you know,
I feel like that's been like freed you up to like just work on your craft as a rapper
for sure,
MC, and not have to worry about making beats all the time.
Absolutely. Yeah, because I mean, like, you know, the creativity comes in waves, if I'm being totally honest. I feel like that's a case with a lot of people, but in this like day and age, we have to like put up a facade that it's like, oh yeah, I'm always working on something, I've always got something on the back burner, you know. But yeah, I go through a lot of periods of like, you know, not writing or not making beats at the moment. I live in like a pretty small apartment, so I don't have like a designated space for my setup. So if I want to like make beats, I really got to like pull everything out from a drawer and get it set up while also navigating my two cats that are just insane. So it's like, it's really gotten to the point where if I want it, I really gotta want it. But no, it is nice to kind of like, you know, if I don't really feel like having to craft beats or whatever, I have people who are now very supportive of what I do. So it kind of frees me up to focus on, you know, one aspect of it, which is pretty nice. Oh, and the other thing too, I talk a lot about this with people, is like, it's cool being somebody who's capable of making my own beats, but also like, it can be tough sometimes when you like sit with something from like the very beginning until is close to the very end as far as beat making goes. And like, you live with this thing for so long that some stuff I build up the expectations of what like lyrics to put over it, that by the end I'm like, I don't even know if anything's good enough for what I think should be on this.
Yeah,
you know, so it can be kind of tough. So I've made beats for years since like, I think I've had my drum machine probably since like 2012, 2013, something like that. And I've had so much stuff that's never seen the light of day or like never been used, because like sometimes it's kind of difficult to, it's like your baby, you know.
Yeah, yeah. For like, sure,
nothing's worthy of going on this, or you know, or I can't do it, you know. So
yeah, it's good to have other ears on things too, to, you know, maybe like let you know.
Oh yeah,
because like, I don't know, it's easy to like get in your own way and not like realize when you have like something that is worthy of like going on something, or it's just like, why aren't you why haven't you put anything to this beat? Or why aren't you using this, like these bars on anything, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. I know a lot of producers specifically probably go through that, especially, you know, people who are constantly cranking things out. I'm sure people like Meltzer probably have like outrageous hard drives of, oh man, I've heard the stories. I've heard the stories, you know what I'm saying? So he's not the only one, you know, there's plenty of people, you know, who have just gold locked away in places, and that's, I'm also guilty of it myself, you know what I mean? So yeah, it is kind of nice inviting people in or finding people that you trust to like give you their honest opinion and, you know, let you know like, hey, there's no reason this should be sitting, especially if you don't like have label backing or anything like that. Like,
yeah,
might as well just put it out there if it's close to being done. I like what Slurgeon was saying in his episode with you about like getting something to like 99% and then just like throwing it out there, because you focus a little too much on certain aspects and there's always something that needs to be fixed.
You're always gonna you're always gonna find something to like criticize and want to tweak and whatnot. So
I will.
Yeah,
I'll find it. You know what I'm saying? So
also, I appreciate you referencing, you know, an episode of the cast.
Come on,
like, appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah. I set it off record, but I'm a huge Dan Cable Presents fan. Let me tell you, a lot of episodes.
It's a mutual appreciation, Corey.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'll do what I can.
So would you say, I don't know, like Algorithm record is like when you really started feeling like you're putting out music that you like, that's your voice and this is like, you know, what Corey B is? And
yeah, I think that one and then the two that came before it, essentially just anything that's come out within me changing my name to Corey B. So the first project I put out under Corey B was called the Big Jacket EP, and that has like a ton of stuff that even, you know, a few years later, I include a lot of that in my set because a lot of those songs really, really stuck with me. And I felt like this is like, that was the cool thing too about changing the name, is I felt like my sound did change. It wasn't like a planned thing. I was just kind of hoping that it had worked out that way, because it's like, oh, what's the point of changing my name if everything kind of just sounds the same, you know? It's like, you can do that and it's not a huge deal, but it's cooler too if you're able to kind of rebrand and do like a full like overhaul. And I feel like I kind of did that with that project. That was also the first time I had recorded like an actual video. My girlfriend had like helped me film that when we were just kind of like bored at my apartment one day, you know, during lockdown, and it was all just through my neighborhood at the time out in Northeast. And I liked the way that that really came together. And yeah, so that was where things started to kind of like, you know, the ball started to roll, and I was like, all right, like I'm going to really take the time to craft this stuff. And this is really just like what it's going to be from here on out. So
yeah,
Big Jacket EP, the 92 project that came out after that, and Algorithm, those are all kind of like the first three, and everything I've done since, I guess.
Yeah. You know? I love that the More You Try track on Algorithm.
Oh yeah,
got that Master Splinter reference.
Thank you. Oh yeah, you know, keep the wisdom in the whiskers. You know what I'm saying? That's a dope one. Yeah, that's another video that I did myself. Just real simple in the apartment I currently live in, and my girlfriend really loves that one too because our cat is in it, so he makes a lot of appearance. It wasn't even planned. He's just like, you know, he just likes hanging out. But yeah, no, I like that one a lot. Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm getting crisper with the scripture through these sips of elixir. Lapping on my competition, never feeling the blisters. Fuck around and have an album if I'm down in the sixer. With this sound, I'm pounding mountains, get to bouncing the Richter. Name dropping those who lousy, never found me no richer. Flame the opposition with no mentioning in my pictures. With the proper vision, I apply precision to hit them. Ain't no intermissions, I am vigorously consistent. Just like Master Splinter, I keep the wisdom inside the whiskers. Too persistent and inventive to diminishing listeners.
And I am finished with illiterate spitters. They tiny pups arrive as mutts, and I'm the pick of the litter. Grimy cuts, I never was the type to sprinkle the glitter. I never miss, I take they disc and flick it into the shitter. And I don't work with spite, I'm not the type to be bitter. I'm good at looking like a threat, they good at looking like dinner. What's up? Slow down
my pace. What do you feel like is maybe informed your style of storytelling through your lyrics?
It's a good question. I don't really know. There's times where I'm like, I question how much of a story I'm actually telling. You know what I mean? Because there's some people who are so specific about, like, you know, certain aspects of their life, or like, this song is about this or what have you. And I feel like a lot of it is more just kind of instinctual. I just kind of like write as I write with like no general focus most of the time. Like a lot of it comes from like feeling from, you know, the beat. A lot of times I write without beats also though. So like some of it, it's just like stuff that comes to me. You know, at my last job, I definitely spent a lot of time when I was supposed to be working,
oh yeah,
writing
love
things
to hear
in
that.
My notes app.
Love to hear that. Is that a fun approach for you when you have written something without a beat and then trying to figure out how to make those words work around a beat?
Oh yeah, for sure. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But and also if I don't have like anything that I'm sitting on, be it like beats of my own or anything from somebody else,
yeah,
I'll just like visit instrumental projects and write to those, and like
just any like anything, like
yeah,
any just, instrumental projects,
yeah, just to kind of have stuff, yeah, like you know, on the back burner, so when it comes time to, you know, work with someone or whatever, like I'm not wasting anybody's time. Like yesterday we went to the EXT 606 studio, me and Eric and my dude MZ. We went in there with the intent of kind of like recording some small stuff here and there, but I was there because somebody else had kind of like called out of going with Eric. So when he like tapped me to go with him, I was like, all right, send me a handful of beats and I promise you I will make tomorrow worth it. And he did, and I happened to like have a couple of like things that were like bits and pieces, so like once he had sent the beats over to me, I was like, oh dude, this is gonna be too easy. And we ended up recording like four tracks in the span of like 3 hours yesterday.
Amazing.
So I was telling him, I was like, I'm a big believer in if you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. You know what I mean? So, and I just like writing anyway. You know what I mean? Especially if I have like a cool like line in my head or whatever. I'm never really one to kind of like wait until I'm in a space where it's like, oh, okay, I'm doing music right now. I kind of just write all the time.
Constantly.
Yeah. Like, you know,
whenever it comes, you're throwing it in the notes app. At
yeah,
the very
for
least.
Sure. Cause hey, like I said, it doesn't always come. So
yeah,
when it does, it's like, oh man, I got to seize the moment. Even if it's just like a little blurb here and there, you know? So
yeah.
Yeah.
You brought up Eric Boderick, former guest of the podcast and mutual homie.
I made a joke. I told him I'm going to tell you that I'm not going to answer any questions about him when I come today.
Amazing. I love that.
No, just messing. Shout out to Eric.
You guys have made a lot of music.
Yes.
This past year, maybe two even.
Yeah.
Creeping up on. Talk to me just about that like creative dynamic between the two of you, and like what you enjoy about working with Eric, and like maybe what you feel like he brings out of you as a rapper.
Lightning in a bottle, you know what I mean? It was through a mutual homie of ours. My friend Sir goes by 10th Member. Also did like half of the beats on the Effortless project that we put out.
Absolutely.
I've known him since before high school.
Okay.
We grew up like skateboarding together and went to the same school for a while, and also just like had so many mutual homies. Like he grew up out in Hillsborough like me. So like that's like a childhood friend that I've had for a long time. And he, I think had started some Discord, called like fellow creative. And, he met Eric through there. So they kind of were in contact with each other. And I think I had a show, a My Goons Hungry Hungry Hip Hop show, where, I think I might have been the headliner that night. I don't really remember. Doesn't matter. But I had met Eric at that show. And, you know, it's just like one of those like, oh, hey, I'm so-and-so, nice to meet you kind of things, you know. Especially when you're just coming off of the stage, there's only so much that you can process in the moment. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because so many people are just like kind of rushing you. But I was like, oh, what's up, man? It's nice to meet you. He's like, yeah. Eric makes beats. Like, they're super sick. You guys should work together, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, yeah, man, I'll get your contact info and then we can like kind of do something. You did like really good tonight. I was like, oh, yeah, totally. Dude sent me beats, or he texted me like later that night. And I was like, whoa, dude.
It wasn't bullshitting. It wasn't like one of those like interactions that you're having. Like, oh, we should do something.
Dude, too many of those to count. You know what I mean? I always mean it. For those of you out there listening who I've had those passing moments with, feel free to hit me up. Yeah. I'm not gassing you up. But yeah, you know, there's so many of those. But like he texted me as I was like leaving the venue, which at the time, and I've told him this, I thought it was kind of weird. I was like,
you're like, dang, dude, like, maybe a little clean.
Relax, bro. Like, what's the rush here? But no, I think I had just put out, a project at the time, or I was gearing up to put out a project, my project Veer. And I wasn't really in a space to like want to work on anything at the time. So I had kind of told him, I was like, hey, man, yeah, no, it was nice meeting you. Like, I'll reach back out to you soon here when I kind of like, you know, clean the slate and like am real willing to like kind of go on to the next thing. And it wasn't too long after that. I think the show was in November of 2021. And then January 2022, I had reached back out to him and I was like, hey, man, yeah, let's see if we can, you know, work some things out or whatever. And he sent me a bunch of beats of his and I was like, holy shit, yeah, this is all really sick. And I think I came up with like, it was just very quick, the turnaround in which like I had heard these things and like came up with things for him and then got him back to him. And yeah, I mean, it was just dope because like, you know, as I've kind of mentioned before, I don't really work with too many people. A lot of that kind of just came from, you know, secluding myself and like also just not really having the, I didn't really do much in the way of like networking, like in the city prior to like the last 2 years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I knew of people through like social media and stuff like that and like going to shows. And, but like, as far as like going through the politics of like actually like getting in the mix and like going to more local shows and like talking to people and like, you know, just not really realizing how important that can be for people to know you're actually in the city and doing what you're doing what you do. So like I was kind of like blown away to get beats from somebody who I had just met and then to come up with something to them so quickly. At the same time, Sir was like making some beats because he, you know, does production and is a pretty good rapper as well. I was working on things simultaneously with them and it got to a point where I was like, well, hey, what if we just did like a joint situation where like you guys kind of like trade off on production, because that could make for like a more diverse situation. I think that'd be pretty cool since we all like met each other through each other.
Yeah.
So that's how the Effortless project came about, and it came about really quickly, hence the name. It was all like within the span of maybe like 2 months or something like that, that we had, I like come up with that whole thing. I recorded like the whole thing at my apartment, and yeah, it was all just really fast. And like, you know, through the run of like doing shows for that album and just kind of being around Eric more, you know what I mean? I don't really hang out with too many people, and he's one of the people that's very quick to like come to me, you know what I mean? And there aren't very many people who are like that. He's just a real proactive guy.
Yeah. It seems like y'all have like a similar work ethic.
For sure. Yeah. No, Dev, he's always got stuff going on. And I'm always willing to throw stuff over it. I try to like give him the space to be his own person, you know what I mean? Because I don't want people to only affiliate him with me. But I think he's at the point now where like he's, you know, I don't want to speak for him, but I feel like what we did with Effortless opened up the doors for all of us to kind of do more within the city and for to just give us more visibility within the city. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So. I mean, it's also, it seems like a mutual appreciation for one another. If like, if he didn't want to be, you know, like associated with you a lot, I don't think that you would be on half the tracks on Bloom.
Probably not, you know.
You're a pair to me.
Yeah, no, for sure. There's no denying the chemistry that our music has together. So like it's all so easy, I feel like. And that's kind of how things came together on Bloom also. It's just kind of, well, hold on, because if we're going to get into that, I want to specify, because I think a lot of people see that I'm on so many tracks on that album and they're like, oh, well, yeah, naturally, like, you know, I want to reassure everybody that's not a favoritism thing, because I was sent the same folder of beats that not only everybody who's on that project was sent, but also people who didn't end up on the project for any number of reasons. So I was given the same folder that everybody else was when it came time to like brainstorming how that project was going to come together.
Yeah.
I was just very hungry. You know what I mean? I saw a door and I walked through it, because yeah. I was like, yo, like a lot of these are super sick. And, you know, I think we have a close enough working relationship where it's like, I made it clear to him too that like, I'm going to record and come up with the things that I want to what you just sent me. Yeah. And if it's stuff that isn't a fit, or, you know, you want to get other people on these tracks, I totally understand. And I think that that's kind of like why our dynamic also works out too, because he's through doing Bloom, getting these opportunities to work with a lot more people. And just cause he's just such a sociable guy. Like he's very proactive. I can't stress it enough. We have like a good understanding of like, you know, I don't want to take advantage of his beats too much. And like, if he sees things that are like a better fit for like things that I've come up with, then I'm all for like him, you know, I put a lot of trust in him to just do what's right for what he's doing also.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, so. I think it's like obviously a testament to how much he believes in what you do though, to, you know, give you that much space on a record, or like want to, you know, then the new Eric Boderick single features you.
All that said, you know, if it was trash, it wouldn't be on there. If he didn't like it, it wouldn't be on there, because I've given him full ability to wipe it if he's not into it. Yeah. You know what I mean? So yeah, I'm thankful that dude believes in me so much, and it's led to a lot of other situations and me being in rooms that like I might not have been in before. So it's all worked out pretty well, I would say. Let's go. Look, never been a product of environment. I had to dial into the requirements it took to be a siren for enlightenment. Kept on striving while they eyeing my retirement. Must be tiring the way there ain't a single sign of it. Quite frightening the way that I've been climbing in. Proved that I was vital to the people like a vitamin. Say they despise the kid but secretly admire him. Pray for my demise then punch the sky because I'm trying to live. I got the fight within and I ain't have to lie. I heard them cries and started playing the world's tiniest violin. Got some dimes of rhyming, now they think they're kinda lit, but couldn't hold a light to the fire I've been ignited with. Can't put a price on it, cause you can't buy this type of gift. I'm tightening my grip on the reins and breaking all kind of shit. Breaking barriers and breaking your entitlement. Death defying brilliance of a diamond, they don't shine like this. Nah.
I love your Live from the Homie video too. Shout out to Eric. His cool video series.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And your episode is killer on that.
Thank you. Yeah. And there's so many more coming out. He's just figuring out the logistics of how to roll it all out. Yeah. And the funny thing about that is like, in being so close to dude, I'm always like kind of the guinea pig for most things. So we had attempted to do that show on several different occasions through like different methods of like filming. When he, like, I think the day that he got that van, he pulled up to my apartment and was like, hey, are you ready to rap? I'm like, always, yeah, for sure. So he just pulled up and like set up his phone like in the back on like a tripod or something, or like up against the seat, and we literally just drove around like the Laurelhurst area, and like I was just rapping over like stuff on the, and I think that made like an Instagram live or something like that, but it's probably been wiped since. But yeah, I'm always the one who's like, hey, I've got this idea. I want to test it out. I'm like, all right. Yeah, sure. Yeah,
so, again, he trusts you, man.
Yeah,
you
know,
that's a vulnerable thing to do when you have new ideas and you don't know if they're going to pan out. So
it
when
really
you have
is.
Like people that you're willing to, you know, jump in the water with and things that, I think it's like really important.
I love doing it. I always feel a responsibility to set the tone. You know what I mean? Because I was also the first episode of that was filmed. So like, I really felt a responsibility to do my best. And shout out to Gaspar, who helped film that legend.
And Gas is a longtime homie. He was on one of the earliest episodes with Fox.
Oh, word.
This podcast, probably like, 20 episodes in.
Nice.
You know? So
yeah, I literally met him that day. I think I had seen him around at stuff, but like never had like the opening to like introduce myself or anything like that. So like we met that day because Eric was trying to figure out like how he was going to film it and stuff, and ended up linking with him. We rode around. I think I did like one test take, and something might have been like off with the mic or something like that. But then once we figured it out, that whole video was recorded in one take. So like
one take Jake.
Yeah, you know, I do my I like I said, I don't like to waste time, you know what I mean? So when you stay ready, you don't gotta get ready. But the cool thing about that one was that, you know, the first track on that video was it's an already established track of mine just over a beat that Eric did.
Yeah.
I'm blanking on the name of the song.
Right, I have now. It written down because I want to play the episode in with that one.
Yeah,
it's,
for sure.
It's Dream Come True, right?
Dream Come True, yes. I'm
did my homework.
Thank you, because you know? I didn't.
Did my homework, Corey.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was Dream Come True, which was originally over a beat produced by Sir, 10th member, and it was a different beat that Eric had, and I'd been doing it at shows recently just to kind of switch things up, you know, so it's still familiar to people if they know the lyrics, but then like it's a different vibe. So that way they're not getting the same version of the same song over and over again. I kind of like to change things up for those who take the time to be consistent in showing up to the shows. You know what I mean? Give them a little more incentive to catch the next one, because every set's always different, whatever. But, yeah, so that was that. And then the second track was a beat that Eric had sent me that I had written that over, but he had never heard it because I hadn't recorded it yet, anything like that. Me rapping it on camera was the first time I rapped that for anybody but myself.
That's killer.
So I was, as soon as we turned over by like Trader Joe's and what used to be the Target over in Hollywood, and that beat came on, I was like, all right, here we go. It's like, it wasn't exactly as back of the hand as Dream Come True was. So I'm glad that I was able to work that one out as best as I did, because that was definitely a first go.
It's killing, dude.
For kind of everybody involved. So I think at the end of the video, it probably cut off or whatever. I think I was like laughing because I was like blown away that I had actually done it. And then I like asked Eric, I was like, how was that, Eric? I wanted to hear his reaction to the whole thing. I love that verse. Change their whole dialogue. Final boss, I am raw. Iron out the kinks when my mind is on. Oversee the scene when I fly across, seeking out the seasoning, but geeks could never buy the sauce. Trying to floss against the god Ali, it gums bloody. I done seen y'all do an awful lot to be a somebody. Got a couple bots to make you pop, curated your whole squad and had to offer up the hush money. There's something funny about the way they claim to build. Only people in the crowd, the same people on the bill. I'm not your equal, I'm too lethal with the skill. Known to give a beat the measles when my speech is getting ill. Still plotting domination, my opposition wanna put a stop to my creation. It's probably because they're only hot in moderation. My proper concentration put me in the light and got me looking like a constellation.
Alright, let's talk about a different style of collaboration. As far as rapping with other people on a track, would you rather go first? Or like, would you rather set the pace and the tone, or would you rather hear somebody else's verse that's on the track and let that inform what you're going to do? Or like, what does that whole situation look like for you?
It's all very different, because along with working with other producers and things like that, collaborating in that way is still kind of new to me also, just 'cause like, you know, prior to the last couple of years, didn't really know anybody. Nobody really knew me. So like, I, you know, I'm still getting in the mix of like getting comfortable extending the, you know, the feature, hand, I guess you could say. And like, so far, you know, I really only work with people who I'm like super cool with. I'm not really one to like meet somebody for the first time and be like, yo, you know what I mean? Yeah. 'Cause that's just kind of how I like to work. But aside from that, I'm kind of just open to whatever most of the time. You know, if it's something that I'm doing, I usually record something. I don't mind like just throwing my verse out there for people to come up with things. I've had instances in which like, with the song Fig Tree, specifically from the Bloom album, Dobleone, shout out Dobleone, legend. He had written his verse to that song before me. So I was able to work off of like, and I think I had gotten that beat before and I was like, oh, this is cool. But I didn't really like have the spark to come up with anything. But as soon as I had heard his verse, I was like, oh yeah, no, absolutely. Like, yeah. Come on, let's go.
So you get that benefit of like, maybe something like someone else's words can inspire what you're going to do, even if you didn't necessarily have something right off the top.
Yeah, no. And I definitely like working in that way. Kind of trying to find a way in which I can help complement like the other verse that's on the track. I feel like I tried to do that a lot throughout the entire project and working with the many incredibly talented people I got to get on songs with on this. Yeah, sometimes it takes hearing somebody else on something to be like, okay, now I want to rap on this, or like I'll, you know, set the tone myself. One thing I don't do that you know, I think is kind of a funny thing to do is you know, writing a verse, laying it, sending that to somebody, getting their verse back, realizing that their verse is killer, and then scrapping your original verse to try to write something better. I think, you know, it's something that people do, you know, but yeah. and you know, people are free to do their thing. But also, like, if somebody bests you on a track lyrically, like, that's just kind of how it has to go. You know what I mean?
Yeah. In some ways, I feel like it almost goes back to that 99% thing we were talking about. It's like, yeah, if you felt good about what you did initially anyway,
yeah,
you know, let that live.
No need to change it. You know, let somebody else get, you know, maybe a little more shine on it, you know, and just be thankful to be a part of it. But, but yeah, no, in being more collaborative, I've found a lot of like, a lot of fun in just like working with something that's already there, or like something that somebody plans to put on it. With the song I'm on with Milk on that one, shout out to Milk, another legend. I was super stoked to be able to be on a track with him. He had already had that song with Eric for a minute, kind of like, I think even before we had put out Effortless, Eric had played me that in the car. And then when it came time to do this, I was like, dude, just give me a chance to put a verse on that track. If you're going to put it on the album, if you don't like it, if the verse doesn't stack up, feel free to take it off. But I just wanted an opportunity to get on that song. So when it came time to write my verse for that, I literally studied Milk's verse like bar for bar. And I tried to mirror not only like his rhyme scheme, but like rhyme like the same syllables as his words.
Oh wow.
So I had heard Black Thought do that on a song, on an Alchemist track with Rock Marciano, and I thought that was like the coolest thing ever, because if you played their verses back to back or like swap the bars, everything would rhyme with it, and it's like the most intricate way of like, you know, coming up with something. It is definitely like a lot of the most work I've put into something, just because it was something that was already laid and it wasn't necessarily like a cadence I would have come up with myself.
Yeah. That's the next level of thought though. You know,
I was trying to take it there because Milk is just outrageous. He's incredible. You know what I mean? Definitely one of my like bigger inspirations as far as like artists in the city go. And like, I just wanted to make sure that I did that track justice while also not like, you know, stepping on toes by any means, but mostly paying tribute to like, cause I don't necessarily think my verse like outshines it in any way. I just wanted to be able to compliment like what he did by like, you know, mirroring it. They throw them disses and they're not hurtful. I'm
in my bag on these beats, and please believe that shit is not Herschel. Controversial how they think I'm packing half the skill. Cats is off the acid when they spit, it's like a hazard spill. Rat bastards couldn't hack it on the battlefield. Put you Krabby Patties in a box just like a Happy Meal. Your crowds is laughter filled. I make the shit they have to feel. They're bad and average lacking. I be cracking hits about the field.
Well, it's cool because it's like, it's not only like a tribute to him and what you were doing, but it also a tribute to the Black Thought, Rock Marciano thing.
Absolutely.
There's layers to it, Corey.
Yeah. You know, so it's things like that where, you know, you get artists who do certain things and think it'd be cool to like try to emulate that. And when it like actually works out, it's pretty dope. And then you have songs like the song with Brax that I have. Shout out to something something Brax.
Joe Musgrove.
Oh man, yo, that is literally, that has got to be one of my favorite songs that I have ever done. Period. Not even just like a feature on. It's so much fun to perform. I've always had like a big appreciation for what Brax does. So like, I think Eric had that beat and just told me that Brax was thinking of getting on it, and I was like, oh dude, well send it to me, because that immediately like gave me an idea of how I'm gonna approach this. So like I think I had written my verse first, or I just hadn't heard Brax's yet, so I just wrote it in a cadence that I thought would like fit well with like what he does, and shouted him out in this song. Like, you know, his name plays big into the rhyme scheme that I did on that song. Dude, he is insane, dude. He is so good, and he's really just one of the coolest people. Like, I'm, oh man, I'm begging to get onto another track with him, but we're gonna make it happen soon for sure. We talk about it enough, so
yeah, he's definitely got one of my favorite styles and deliveries.
He's so dope. My, you know, my girlfriend loves that verse. She said it sounds like he's just like in the studio, like floating away. I'm like, yeah, no, he was. Yeah. I was there. So yeah, shout out to Brax, man. He's the homie for sure. Purpose in my work, so I'm divergent in the course. Curse the vermin who wish hurt upon my horde. I don't wait. Their final fate will be determined by the sword. I'm not the person to ignore. If they don't purchase what I'm serving, then I'm certain and I'm sure they've heard the lore. They thought we'd worse and be discouraged evermore, but we're immersed within these verses. So immersed within these verses, yeah. What? Hey, yeah, hey. Been out here setting the pace while they just been taking up space. Hey, yeah. Trying to pick fights with the gang. Know there's a price you gon' pay. Cause we don't take kindly to lanes, ayy. Crowd working to the front row as I rub behind my greasy little ears like Joe Musgrove. My team's not filled with cutthroats, just people with some principles. Extraordinary band of individuals who's doing nothing other than making the funk. And something, something likely is a synonym for breaking slumps. Glum dog billionaire who noticed he was fighting an antagonist that isn't there. Nervous, but he isn't scared.
When you think about, I don't know, honing your craft in now, or what practice maybe looks like for you now versus when you started, where do you feel like you see the big differences?
I think just the consistency of gigs. You know, when I was like starting out early, opportunities only came up so much because it was all through like events that my friends were throwing. My old homie Jair used to run this, or he still runs this skateboard company called Rose Skateboards. And a lot of the early performance opportunities I got were directly through events he was running with his company, you know, be it like video releases or anything like that. Funny enough, kind of just to go back a little bit here, my very first show, my very first rap show was in this, it was this place, it was half of it was a Mexican supermarket, the other half was an indoor skate park. And it was out in Beaverton, and it was just like the sickest thing, dude. Like, it was so cool. And like, my friend Jair had like a big hand in like making that come to life and stuff. So when it came time to do the opening and things, they threw like a big event with a bunch of other rappers and things like that. And that was technically my first rap show. I'll never forget it just because of like how outrageous the location was. I was like, oh, yeah. This shit is sick. It was very short lived, unfortunately. They threw some pretty big ragers there. One of them in particular, I think, had kind of put the nail in the coffin on the market being like, yo, we do not want this shit here.
We're all
dude.
Set.
Yeah, no, you guys are like fucking things up. But that was definitely a legendary thing. But yeah, I would say the big change has just been in the consistency of like getting gigs and like having an idea of when they're coming up, because like I'm able to like I try to do a different set list like every time I perform.
Yeah,
like I said, it gives incentive to the people who are coming like pretty regularly to the shows that you're not getting the same show every time you see me.
Yeah,
and I feel like that's very important, even if it is a different crowd every time that they come. I also try to consider like, you know, what the bill looks like or what the venue is like. I'm just very methodical about like the way in which I arrange a set list for specific events. I did like 3 shows in the like last couple of months, or it was in October. I had done like 2 shows back to back, but then like the one for Hawthorne, like a week before October. And I had different set lists for all 3 of those, which was pretty intricate. And like, I was like, man, maybe I'll come to regret this, but I definitely feel like it's important to kind of put as much like thought into the way I curate those sort of things, because I just care to that extent. And
yeah,
like,
it's impressive, dude.
Thanks. Yeah. And yeah, I don't know. I take a lot of pride in like being hands-on in that way and like making sure I'm delivering the best show that I possibly can, you know. And I feel like I have enough in the catalog now that I'm able to do that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yeah. And then aside from that, dude, I like practice all the time. Like I'm not someone who just leaves it up to like things working out when I get up there. Like throughout the week, I'm going through the whole thing and just remembering, cause sometimes I'll pull stuff from a catalog, like from a project that I've either never really performed or haven't performed in a while. And I just really want to make sure that when the time comes, it's not super clear that that's the case. You know what I mean?
Always be ready.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah, man. I think that's impressive that you're putting that level of thought into the live show. And also just cause like, if you are going to play a lot of shows in town, thinking about the people that might come out multiple times, you know, they're not always seeing the same thing. So I appreciate that you're putting that thought into it. And just overall, like I was saying at the top of the conversation, I think like it's really clear to me every time I see you perform, if it looks effortless, it's because I can tell that you put a lot of work and a lot of care into what you're doing, you know?
Yeah, for sure. You know, as I've kind of like mentioned numerous times, my biggest thing about making music is the performance aspect. I feel like everything I make with the intention of performing one day. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, yeah, just to be able to get so many opportunities in the last couple of years to actually do that and like kind of showcase to people like what I feel is my strong suit when it comes to making music has been like, it's definitely been an honor for sure.
And I think like rap is just like a pretty unique art form in that way, especially in the live form. And I was thinking about this a lot yesterday, is that like with like maybe something like indie rock or specifically punk rock, I think like a singer can get away with certain things, like maybe not being perfectly in time and dragging a little bit. But like when you see a rapper do their thing, you know, you can very clearly see if they fall out of the pocket in a way that was unintentional, you know?
Yeah.
And so like, I just really respect like any of your live performances that I've seen. I'm just like, this dude's a killer on the mic.
Thank you. So, that really means a lot.
Yeah. I appreciate what you're doing. And, it's nice to get to, you know, just chat it up with you on the mics and get to hear about where all this comes from.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, nobody's ever really asked. So I'm definitely, you know, I'm willing to share the story, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we end every episode of the podcast, Corey, with the guest saying the tagline for the show, which is "It's a program." So if we can get the Corey B, "It's a program," we can properly sail this thing out.
Sick. I feel like this is like my Nardwar moment.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, no, of course. My name is Corey B, and it's a program.
He nailed it, everybody. That's Corey B.
Thank you.
You know, he's not your equal.
Yeah. Hey, he said it.
He's not your equal. He's too lethal with the skill. And I'll put all the links in the episode notes so people can keep up with you, man. And I want to play the episode out with "Life for Me."
Oh yeah, love it.
Thought that would be a good track to play it out with. So we're playing it out with that one, and all the links are in the episode notes, and that's the Jelly Jams, and we will catch you on the flip side, Portland, or wherever you are listening from. Cool, man.
You
did it.
Sick, dude. Hell yeah.
Psychopathic, enigmatic, flow they'll never get to match it. Always come in different patterns, close it up, quit the chatter. Say they're reaching heights when we was climbing up a different ladder. Spent the life just trying to write, but shit was slight, it didn't matter. Mismatching fabrics, gotta lift the swagger, or I switch it back and paint it black like I was Mickey Jagger. Skipping chapters cause they thought that they could finish faster. Prove they're not a factor, now I'm dipping past you little bastards. You little rappers is fun size. Y'all cowards sound asleep, I'm clocking out for my lunchtime. Do more in a week than you done in your dumb life. Work every day for cash to say you sound like that one guy. Hey, this is what it sound like when doves cry. Your crowds is full of crickets, shit it sound like a bug's life. I was in the kitchen whipping up another fix, and they was fumbled in the vision, could've did it with one eye. Really, really, y'all was 50-50 in front side. Before y'all had one foot up on the board, me don't comply. Y'all ain't doing good against the boy when I bust mines. Y'all done try to sit up to the boy on the front lines. Turn you to a toy for trying to look like a tough guy. I don't need too much room to prove I'm a fun guy. I done been destroying for a while, it's no surprise. The hype is extra heightened, ain't no time here to subside. I punch lines and crush flows into mush. Type of stuff to grab your spine and crunch your bones into dust. I asked about the vibes and E-Replied, just go with my gut. They gave me peace of mind to reach inside and throw this shit up. Corrupt intentions on the rise in the land of the snakes. That's why I keep a watchful eye on every hand that I shake. Cause cats be acting out of line and can't align with the greats. Do all that yapping on the line and turn their moms in your face.
Hey, just want to give a big shout out to DistroKid for sponsoring this episode of the podcast and for their longtime support of this thing. Don't forget to find that discount link in the episode notes or in my Instagram bio. 30% off your first year membership with DistroKid, helping you get your music in all the places it needs to be. Stay up, stay tuned.